I'm Lindsay, and I'm here talking beer at the Allagash Brewery in Portland, Maine, which is way outside the loop. And you're listening to Mike Steven on Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thanks, Lindsay. Yes, the Allagash Brewery is very much outside the loop in Portland, Maine. More on that in just a second. Good morning. Nice to be here with you. This is Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I'm Mike Steven. This is show number 547. As I look out the windows of the Allstate Showcase studio, I think I see sunlight, which means we are getting closer and closer to summertime. Love it. What we do here on the show is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. And we have a lot of fun here each week. So again, happy that you are here along with us. Say hello online. You can search for us on Facebook, Outside the Loop Radio, on Twitter, at Outside the Loop. The show is a podcast as well. You can go to WGNRadio.com to get the archives or subscribe for free through the iTunes machine. This is the point in the program where we say good morning to Andy Herman, producer of the show. Hello.
Good morning, Mike Steven. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
I'm doing all right. And Veronica's up in the newsroom.
Good morning.
Nice to see everybody. And Andy, I spent a few days way outside the loop.
I heard.
In Portland, Maine.
Yeah, I love that intro.
Did you? What's right? Also, can you turn up your microphone a little bit?
Turn up my mic.
Yeah, there you go.
All my buttons and knobs are messed up in here.
Yeah, well, I'll lodge a complaint with management.
All right,
I'm writing a letter.
Send that up to the union.
Yeah. on it. So you
so
have
Portland, Maine is definitely outside the loop.
Correct.
Outside of our scope of topics and issues.
This is true.
But the best part, the part that cracked me up, it's not a beef, it makes me laugh, is that she said, you're listening to Mike Steven in Outside the Loop. That's the first of the intros, I believe, where you inserted your own name.
Now, hold on a second. There's a reason. So here it is again.
Hey, I'm Lindsay, and I'm here talking beer at the Allagash Brewery in Portland, Maine, which is way outside the loop. And you're listening to Mike Steven on Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Okay, now there's a reason for that. Because she says, we were talking about it. So I was there. I was in Portland, Maine. I went to the Allagash Brewery. Mm-hmm. By the way, great people over there. Mm-hmm. Really great people over at Allagash. They treated us right. Gave us a great tour of the facility. It was a beautiful facility. Very, very hospitable folks over there. So really a great time over in Portland, Maine with the folks over at Allagash. But and Lindsay was great, by the way. She's a certified Cicerone.
Really?
That's like the sommelier for beer.
Hmm.
So we sampled a bunch of stuff that you can't get anywhere else.
Nice.
Like on the planet. It was really cool. But the copy, I said, oh, well, on the copy on my phone, I'm like, here.
The copy you submitted to her before.
Right, that she had to clear. I said, can you read this? And the line was, hey, we're in, obviously, you know, Maine is way outside of, like you said, what we do here on the show. And so it's she was reading it, and it's she said, hey, this is Outside the Loop, or you're listening to Outside the Loop. No, how did it go? Oh yeah, it was Portland, you know, Allagash Brewery in Portland, Maine, which is way outside the loop,
right?
And you're listening to Outside the Loop, so that we
she
needed
wanted
something
to split
to break that
bit
up. Yeah,
see, I thought she was just like a national fan of Mike Steven. Like she's welcomed you to the Allagash Brewery.
There's only one national fan, and that is my mother, who happens to live here. So
a few miles away.
Yeah, not too far away. But she's here. That's the only fan.
See, I think Lindsay was like, oh my God, Mike Steven's here.
Nope. None
I
of that at all.
He's
actually
in Portland, Maine.
Well, it was funny.
I need to say his name as much as possible.
I had to explain, like, okay, look, so this show is in Chicago. Because she's like, what are you having me read? What is this? What is going on?
Which
here
is the typical reaction when we ask people to do that.
Right. Like, what is this?
Who are you?
Right, but great folks over there at Allagash.
Nice.
Beautiful facility. I mean, really just, and they're working hard. It's incredible to see how much of the product they put out. And Chicago is their number two market.
I believe that with any brewery.
Allagash is in 17 states, and apparently it's California. And then Chicago, like the region of Chicago, is their number two market. They do really well here.
Awesome.
So very hospitable folks. Portland, Maine, by the way, very nice people. But when we went there, and I went with a couple friends, the reaction was always like, why are you coming to Portland, Maine in March? You know?
Yeah.
So you're
like, it's just a dude's weekend.
It was a little dude's weekend. It was
have some brunch.
It was we did some brunching.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do really antiquing, Andy.
No,
but we did brunch.
Okay.
We did brunch.
All right.
And seafood
in Portland, Maine, in March.
That's right.
With dudes,
and we went to a lighthouse. I'm not kidding you. We went to a lighthouse.
You have to tell me about that later.
We got a picture. Maybe we could put a picture up on the old interwebs.
Yeah? Send me one.
I'll send you
two. I need to see the collection of Portland, Maine photos.
Oh, hey, Andy.
Dude's weekend.
Do we have a show this morning?
We do.
We do have a show.
Let's get to it.
All right. Coming up later this hour, we head to Pilsen to meet the founder of a local urban apiary service called Westside Bee Boys. It's a really interesting story because they specialize in beekeeping, and we'll talk all about that. Before that, an update on something I talked about 6 years ago. Back in 2011, I interviewed the director of a locally produced independent horror film. And now, 6 years later, that film is finally finished. We get the story. But first, there's a new exhibit over at the Chicago Children's Museum at Navy Pier that seeks to eliminate gender stereotypes. We'll talk all about that coming up after these right here on Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven. This is 720 WGN. Well, there's supposed to be music there, Andy. I don't know what's going on. You got some music over there? Yeah. Things are going great. Yeah, it was working before. Do you have the music or I can just keep going? I'm a professional radio host here. This is 720 WGN. Good morning. This is Outside the Loop. Normally, you would be hearing some local tunes from a musician or band here in Chicago. This band that we are hoping to feature today called Nest, and they're playing over at the Mutiny. That's coming up on Saturday, April 15th. So next Saturday, maybe we've got some tunes. There it is. Website, weareallynest.com. Again, next Saturday over at the Mutiny in Chicago. Some pop, grunge, indie rock from right here in Chicago. Each week, I love to feature local music, and this week, hearing some tunes from Nest. So in our society, we are told what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman. And we learn at a very early age certain behaviors that are appropriate for boys and girls and what guys should be involved in and what kind of place women have in society. And the question here is, where does all this stuff come from? And you think about it, really, this is how we grew up. And a new exhibit at the Chicago Children's Museum removes gender stereotypes. It's called Once Upon a Castle, and the president and CEO of the Chicago Children's Museum is on the phone with us this morning. She is Jennifer Farrington. Jennifer, welcome to Outside the Loop. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. I think this is absolutely fascinating, especially because I have a two-year-old son, and so this is something that really is on my mind, you know, how to obviously raise him well, but also what kind of a person will he become and what sort of values do I want to teach him? And I'm just thinking about my own experience, and so many of us, we're taught at an early age, like I said, what it means to be male and female. And what we don't often talk about is that there is really a wide range of ways to express gender, isn't there?
Absolutely. And that was something that was so exciting for us as we thought about developing the exhibit is, you know, just as you said, who will your son become? We want your son to become who he is, and we want him to express all of his ideas. And so we really challenged ourselves to think about the stereotypes that come along with kings and queens and princes and princesses. And we said, how could we create a situation where any child can play any role they want to play in this exhibit?
And that's so neat. And really, I mean, you think about like the fairy tale narrative. I mean, that is at the very core. We think, hey, it's so innocent and we should, you know, we've all gone through it. But when you think about who's in charge, who's the king and who's the queen and then so on and so forth, and the princess who seems to be always helpless for whatever reason and is in need of saving, I mean, when you extrapolate that, I mean, man, apply that to society. That's what we're taught at a very early age.
Exactly. You've got it. And that's what we really wanted to do. We really wanted to remove the predictable script and allow children the freedom to build their own narrative. So who's going to be strong? Who's going to be weak? Who's going to be in peril? Who's going to be the rescuer? Those roles may play out. Those are elements of any exciting story, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what we wanted was we wanted children to have the freedom to decide who was going to play the role. And we wanted to challenge ourselves as people who have a background in child development and creating extraordinary experiences for kids. We wanted to say, how can we do this in a new way, in a fresh way that really allows children to have the most imaginative control, creative control in their own roles as possible?
And so tell us about the exhibit, the Once Upon a Castle exhibit, because like you said, you're taking back this castle narrative, this sort of fairy tale narrative from this damsel in distress sort of thing. You're sort of taking that back. How does this work when we go to the Chicago Children's Museum, we go to this exhibit? What does it entail?
So what we wanted to do was we wanted to create an exhibit that definitely said castle play. It has all the things you want to that you're going to expect to see. It's got the secret tunnels, it's got the rope bridge, the tower, the throne. Some of the things we did, for instance, is the throne, instead of being one throne for the king and one throne for the queen, we have a throne bench. You may have the whole royal family sitting up there together. And so we did that for a couple of reasons. We want it to be accessible, but we also wanted to be more inclusive. And we often will see one child laying down and claiming the entire thing for themselves, or we may see three or four siblings or new friends sharing it together and being, you know, the royal family in power. So it was little things like that. We also really wanted to create this sense of adventure. And then from there, we said, how could we allow any child in it to choose that story, to pursue the adventure? So we really thought a lot about costumes and about how the exhibit looks. You're going to see a noticeable absence of sort of the pink and sparkly. It's a more natural, wooden, heavy-duty experience that kids can climb on and do things and pull over the bench at the long feast table. But you're also going to see costumes that children can wear regardless of gender, costumes that adults and kids can wear, wide range of fabrics and colors.
You're really putting kids in the driver's seat here. I mean, very much this is child-centered play. The children are leading this. And when you observe children, and I guess adults, because adults are going to be there as well, what are the reactions from the kids and from the adults? Because I got to think, I mean, you know, the children are still, they still have so much to learn, and that's great. They're still so pure. They probably just get right into it, I would think. What's the reaction been from the kids and the adults?
Well, the children have had no problem. They come in, they see a tower, they see a feast table, they see a place where they can, you know, a cauldron where they can mix a potion. They know exactly what to do. The adults sometimes have a little bit harder time adjusting. You know, we had a case where a little girl was looking for a tiara. It turned out the caregiver was really the one who was looking for the tiara, and it turned out that the girl, what she really wanted to wear was she wanted to wear a blue tunic, and she was going to be somebody in the Percy Jackson books, you know, with her older sibling. So she actually knew what she wanted. So the adult kept searching for the tiara and seemed a little bit more disappointed. You know, the child grabbed that blue tunic, grabbed the horse, and galloped off with the older sibling. So, you know, the kids move on really, yeah, really quickly. And I think that's a lesson for us is, you know, we also, you know, we had a dad, where are the princess costumes? You know, well, their princess costume is what you make of it in here, you know?
Yeah.
It's also, you can still be a princess, but you might wear something that's purple, or might wear a crown that anybody could wear.
Right. And that's okay. And I think, you know, as adults, we have to sort of unplug or rewire ourselves because we've been so trained in, you know, blue is for boys, pink is for girls, girls wear the tiaras, and the boys have the swords and the shields, and they go and they be the heroes and they rescue the women. And hey, women can do the rescuing too. That's okay. That's a good thing. If a boy wants to wear pink, congratulations, you can wear pink. You know, when we talk about parenting, like I said, I've got a 2-year-old son. When we think about the things that we can do for our children to sort of defeat these gender stereotypes, it sounds like, I mean, this exhibit at the Chicago Children's Museum is a really neat way to sort of get into that. But there are a bunch of things that we can do.
Yeah, there's so many ways. First of all, we don't want gender to make the rules about what kids can or can't play. Children of all ages enjoy and benefits many kinds of imaginative and creative play, regardless of gender. So we don't have to think about gender determining the activity. Everybody can be a superhero. Everybody can enjoy an animal party. Everybody can enjoy a royal feast. We don't need to sometimes go as narrow as we may be tempted to go as adults. The same thing with choosing gifts or choosing play activities. We don't need to buy into this idea that there's boy toys and girl toys. You know, we can challenge ourselves to say, wow, you know, we talk all the time, oh, we want our girls to get more engaged in STEM, or we want boys to feel comfortably more sensitive. So let's look at that. Are the toys that a small child needs really that different? I would argue that both children need something to love and care for and practice that important skill, and everybody deserves puzzles and blocks and problem-solving tools.
Yeah, I think this, what you're doing, it's important, and we may not think about it every day, but it is something that really is vital, because it is affecting everybody in this country. When we think of the stereotypes that we have and the roles that men and women play, and certainly we see the statistics of violence that perpetrated by males, and when we talk about domestic violence especially. And so this is, I think, really, really important and fascinating. The Chicago Children's Museum over at Navy Pier. I'm sure everyone knows where that is. And check out chicagochildrensmuseum.org if you'd like to check out all the exhibits there, especially Once Upon a Castle. Jennifer Farrington is the president and CEO of the Chicago Children's Museum. Hey, Jennifer, thank you so much for talking to us this morning. It's fascinating. It's important. And I think it's a great resource that we have here in Chicago. So thanks.
Thank you so much. We look forward to having you and your family come play as well.
Absolutely. Little Mikey, he would love the castle. He would love the castle. So
he would love it.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Stevens. Stay right there. This is 720 WGN.
Back in a straight line.
720 WGN. Good morning. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven. Happy to be here with you on this Saturday morning. So happy that you are here with us right now, listening to some local music from the band Nest from right here in Chicago. They're playing next Saturday at the Mutiny in Chicago. We are reallynest.com is their website. And they're going to be going on tour in May, so that's very exciting, all over the Midwest. Each week, I love to feature local music, and if you are a musician or if you are in a band and you'd like to get your songs on the radio, just send us what you got. You can go to WGNradio.com, send us some songs, and we'll mention those gigs that you've got coming up this week, hearing it from Nest. Six years ago, in 2011, all the way back in 2011, I talked with, on this show, the director of an independently produced film that was crowdsourced for funding called Chicago Rot. It was a horror/supernatural flick, entirely shot and produced here in Chicago. Well, 6 years later, the film is done, and I'll tell you what, it's out there, and it's all complete, and the director and the co-writer of Chicago Rot is Dorian Weinzimmer, and he is on the phone with us this morning, 6 years later, to give us an update about, hey, what took so long? Dorian, nice to talk to you again, man.
Hey, it's great to talk to you too, Mike. Thanks so much for having me on after the extended absence and for remembering who I was.
I had to dig a little bit, you know, in the audio archives of Outside the Loop, but that's okay. So the question I have for you, what have you been doing for the past 6 years? You know, we talk about movies being made. Usually it doesn't take 6 to 7 years. What's been going on?
Yeah, no, not usually. I mean, the short answer is, you know, when you don't have money, you spend time.
That's true.
You know, either way, a resource is being spent. So there was zero, I mean, as hard as it is to believe, even for us looking back, there was really zero idle time over those 7 years like that we spent on this. There were lots of, sure, roadblocks, hiccups, and obstacles that we had to overcome, and many times that we kind of had to sit down and, like, bang our head against the wall and go, this might be a dead end, and, you know, something miraculous would happen, or we'd have lightning would strike, but I mean, really, it's just been a constant push from all of us. You know, it was an ambitious script from the get-go. And, you know, we all sort of committed to not having, you know, not making any compromises throughout, no matter what it took. Like, if we felt like we were diminishing something by, you know, due to the stresses of the day or time or technical considerations, you know, we weren't going to let that overcome what we knew we were there to do. So sticking to those standards, you know, thankfully, we're very proud of what we've ultimately created. It paid off in the long run, but it definitely created some very, very difficult times for us throughout the process.
I bet, yeah. Were you shooting over the past 6 years, or did you shoot, like, years ago, and it just took this long to get everything done?
Yeah, kind of a little bit of both. Most of our production was done in, like, November, December of 2011, and then in June and July of 2012. That was probably like 90% of the movie was shot in that, like, you know, less than a year period. However, there were multiple, like, pickups that we had to do, things that, you know, once we got in the edit room, didn't work out. And, you know, we just decided to go back and reshoot because either, you know, the effects weren't working properly that we shot, like the blood effects, special effects and makeup stuff. Or just, you know, structurally, just from a storytelling standpoint, you know, we just had approached it wrong. And, you know, just kind of beginner mistakes that we were expecting and that, you know, we wanted to surmount rather than just sort of, like, live with.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned blood. You mentioned effects, makeup. This film has a lot of all those things. I said it's like a horror supernatural film entirely in Chicago. I want you to give us a brief overview of what this is, because if you are someone who likes the horror genre, you will definitely dig the film, especially if you like stuff that features the city of Chicago. I mean, the thing is called Chicago Rot, and we'll talk about that name, but what is this film about?
Yeah, to give you the you know, general synopsis, it's about a man named Les, who's a street vigilante, who's known as the Ghoul, who, you know, sort of Batman-esque in the sense that he's, you know, kind of off on his own, not really part of law enforcement, but he's, you know, going after criminals and those types of things, but when he was a child, his mother was murdered, and he believes his soul was stolen. And the reason he became this vigilante is because he was going after the person who did this to him. And he ends up getting arrested due to what appears to be him murdering a police officer. And our film picks up many years after that when he's getting out of prison. He's middle-aged now, and he's ready to kind of finish this once and for all.
And the film Chicago Rot, I remember this from 6 years ago. You were really talking about sort of the, and focusing on the underbelly of the city, because for you, that was fascinating. And I get that as someone who really, I personally, I'm fascinated with what goes on in the streets and in the neighborhoods. What I remember you saying is, you know, the film is sort of a play on that, where we take the unsightly stuff in the city and we feature that as sort of like part of the film, a character almost in the film. That's where you shot. You looked for these not glamorous parts of the city.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, that was something that originally brought Bram McRae, who is the lead actor of the film and who I co-wrote the script with. That was originally something that brought the two of us together, just from an aesthetic standpoint when we were in film school, and then on this project in particular after we graduated, was that sense of destroy beauty. We love that kind of like decay, that thing that happens, you know, when these ruins are left just sort of like derelict and, you know, time just takes its toll on them. It creates something like just, you know, in its destruction, something new and beautiful is created. And that's just been an object of fascination for both of us. And this city is full of those places and those things. I mean, given, you know, everything, how big of a part that the city played in the Industrial Revolution, things like that. And as, you know, things moved forward and those places became abandoned, you know, they've been left to just sort of, you know, rot and in a way, you know, beautify.
Yeah. And the film is out. It's out right now. Tell us how we can get it, because your website is chicagorot.com, Chicago, R-O-T, chicagorot.com. There are some opportunities for streaming the film and buying the DVD, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we are available on DVD exclusively through Amazon currently. And on VOD, we are available through basically every streaming service in existence, Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, Xbox, Google Play, Vimeo. We're even on Steam, which is a video game platform, but they started doing movies recently, and we're on there too. So if you can stream movies through it, we're probably there.
Cool. Just search for Chicago Rot. What's next for you, man? I mean, it took you 7 years total to make this bad boy. But hey, that's okay. You did it. Anything in the hopper coming up next?
Yeah, absolutely. I am typically very cagey about these types of things. I like to, you know, perpetuate the element of surprise. But we do have another script that myself and one of the actresses actually from Chicago Rot have been working on together for the past couple of years, actually, kind of on and off. And it's getting to the place where we're both getting pretty happy with it. So we're starting to talk to the rest of the crew about it and, you know, figure out how we can make this happen.
Cool. We'll talk again in, 2023?
Yeah, we're working on making a quicker turnaround on the next one, so hopefully
that's
much sooner than that.
All right. Well, check out chicagorot.com, and it's another great story of independent film production here in Chicago. Dorian Weinzimmer is the director and co-writer of the film Chicago Rot. Again, chicagorot.com. Hey, Dorian, great to talk to you, man. Congratulations on the film, and best of luck with everything in the future.
Thanks so much, Mike. Can't tell you how much we appreciate you taking the time to have me on.
Oh, you got it, man. You got it. Absolutely. And excited to see what is coming next. Again, chicagorot.com is the website. This is Outside the Loop. Stay right there. We'll take a quick break. Be right back here on 720 WGN. Good morning, 720 WGN. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven. Happy to be here with you on this sunny Saturday morning. Stay tuned, Mr. Fix-It Lou Manfredini coming up at 7 o'clock. And right now, listening to the local music from Nest. WeAreReallyNest.com is their website. They've got a show next week at the Mutiny next Saturday. Some grunge indie rock out of Chicago with some pop characteristics to it. Each week, I love featuring local music, and this week, hearing some tunes from Nest. There's a great beekeeping community in Chicago. Yes, beekeeping, and an organization that specializes in beekeeping and helping out the rest of us participate in beekeeping is called Westside Bee Boys. And in fact, I've got some Westside Bee Boys honey that I picked up earlier this week. It's in my tea right now, and it's very delicious. And earlier this week, I had a chance to sit down with the group's founder at his home in Pilsen. There were no bees around, but we still talked about how he owes bees a debt of gratitude, and this is the story. Weather in Chicago, I mean, we can't be outside right now. We can't be among nature. We can't be among bees because we are rained out here. So we're in the kitchen of Thad Smith. He is the founder of Westside Bee Boys. Check him out, westsidebeeboys.com. That's boys with a Z, YZ, westsidebboys.com. Urban apiary services. That's what you do here in Chicago and beyond, all over the state of Illinois, Thad. First of all, thanks for having me over. And I'll tell you what, we were just talking off the microphone how busy you are. But I want you to tell us what you do as someone who has started this company, westsidebboys.com, Urban Apiary Services. What are you all about?
I'm a beekeeper. And so when I started Westside B-Boys, it was all about starting a beekeeping supply store, selling equipment. There's over... My estimate is over 100,000 beekeepers here in the city and suburbs of Chicago.
Wow.
It's a lot of beekeepers. It's a lot of bees. A lot of equipment to be sold. Everybody buys their stuff online. Why buy their stuff online? When you can come right to my store, I can give you the cheaper price. You're going to spend gas. But guess what? You're going to get more of the visit when you come there because you get to talk to a beekeeper. That was the whole goal. I was part of the team that started that goal, that's called the Hive Supply. It's on Roosevelt and Homan. No longer business partners with them anymore. However, I still support them. My old business partner, John, he's still a part of that. So that was the goal. But what happened was is that the company I was working for, Sweet Beginnings, we were managing their hives. That's what I was doing. I was their beekeeper. So I'm managing 131 hives. That's pretty much how West Side Bee Boys came about. I'm just a manager of beekeeper of hives, so why not really get paid for it? So split with Sweet Beginnings, started the beekeeping store. However, as I was moving forward, one company, 300 South Riverside, approached me and said, "Hey, we want bees on our rooftop. Do you guys do that?"
Sure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no problem. I can make that happen for you. And then their sister building, 540 West Madison, they wanted bees on the rooftop. And that's kind of how the Urban Apiary Services Company came about. I got the name from a business mentor of mine, Chris Connolly. He coined that term, and I've been using it ever since.
So why does one want bees, like on the rooftop, on their property? What are the benefits?
So I tell people all the time, anything you do, it's always about money. At the end of the day, it's always about money. So why do we care about honeybees? And everybody says, "Oh, pollination, honey, yada, yada, oh, that's some crap." It's money.
Okay.
It's money, man. We care about honeybees because they make something that makes money for us. And we try and replicate it in everything. So let's be clear. So if they didn't make honey, man, they'd be on a list of stuff we're trying to kill. Guaranteed. Just guaranteed. So because we're trying to kill everything else but honeybees, that's why we need to have honeybees. But having honeybees, I've been on a honeybee kick, and I'm glad I'm doing that. But however, I've forgotten that there are other native bee pollinators that we are completely forgetting that really pollinate 90% of the food that we eat. Illinois, we only grow corn and soybean here. That's our largest commodity. 90% of the food that we eat here in Illinois is imported in. So when we take out the native bee population, we are talking about absolute food security. Illinois is going to be the biggest hit because we are in the middle of the country. And guess what? It's going to be harder for us to get food. And we only grow corn and soybean. So, you know, that's why you need to have bees. Pollination, food security. You get tax breaks, yada, yada. But honey is the other issue, too. It's nice and sweet.
You know, here we are in your kitchen. And you've got all sorts of paraphernalia for your operation, which is great. But
my wife hates it, but you know, you got to do what you got to do.
You got the West Side B-Boys going, man. You're a star. Your story, though, I think is really interesting because you're in a good place now. You weren't always in a good place.
No.
Tell us briefly, I mean, you took some sidesteps here, but I think it's a great story of how you got to be where you are doing this in Chicago.
Life, you're going to make mistakes. It all depends on what you do after a mistake and how you move forward. So long story short, I did have a business before. Mr. Schmitty made some money, lost that business. Me and my wife separated, lost my house, living on the street 2 years. It was a rough time for me. During that time, you kind of go into just a cycle, you know. It's just a routine. You have the same routine every day, and it's hard to break out of that routine. That's why homelessness is so bad. It's hard to break out that routine. So, man, I wrote some bad checks, got caught, spent some time in jail, and after that, having two felonies was easy to get a job before, having two felonies in black, man, it was really hard. So found two beginnings. Well, first I found North London Employment Network. They have the U-Turn Permitted Program. It's a great program. And then they hired me at their social organization called Sweet Beginnings. That's where I learned beekeeping, honey products. I'm an avid learner, love to learn. If I find something that I can never learn enough of, I will be on it all the time. Bees are that thing. It was just something about it, man. I just loved, from the time I opened the hive, I was hooked, and I've been hooked. I've been doing it ever since.
No, that's great. I mean, I think it's a great story. And again, so great that a program like that like got you into this. Yes. And you found that. I mean, you're a curious person. It seems like you're into learning, like you said. But you really found sort of your niche here. And now you're going for it. Westside B-Boys are all over the place. Right, like I said, like all over the state of Illinois. So
we are literally super busy
right now. It's crazy. It's good though.
It is good. This past couple weeks, this month has been really absolutely awesome. We did a good food fest a couple weeks ago. The biggest day Westside B-Boys has ever had sales wise. I'm starting this new initiative. February 12th of 2013, walked out of jail. Next year will be my 5-year anniversary. A woman who I dealt with a long time ago, Hope Minio Gladstone, I don't know if that's still her last name, but Hope Minio, she told me people change every 5 years. So in 5 years, it took me literally 5 years to change to the person that I am. I'm still that same that I was before. My focus is just different. You know what I mean? Different friends, not different views, but I have different opportunities ahead of me. So I'm starting the 100 Hives 5-Year 5 Lives initiative. So if you want to really help me, that's what I want to help. So the 5-Year 5 Lives, 25 hives in different neighborhoods, but the key thing is having an apprentice every year for the next 5 years, affecting one person's life. And I can have other apprentices, you know, interns, blah, 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 but having one person who gets involved in woodworking, bees, native bees, agriculture, who gets to follow me around and gets to see what entrepreneurship is. Not necessarily you're going to be my takeover, but you get to learn, you get to do your own thing, you get to get your own jobs, find your passion. So that's what I'm really looking for. I'm really looking for sponsors for that. So you can go to westsidebboys.com. I always say, man, you can call me. I am a small company, really small, 312-391-4429 or thad@westsidebboys.com.
All the information's up at westsidebboys.com. That's boys with a Z, westsidebboys.com. We'll put that information up on the show's website as well. Thad Smith, the founder of Westside B-Boys, thank you for having me over to your kitchen here in Pilsen. And keep doing what you're doing, man. I think it's a great story. It's a nice and wonderful addition to Chicago. And I think you're an inspiration to a lot of folks. So thank you.
Thank you for just reaching out to me, man. It's really great. This is my workspace, so I love inviting people in.
Well, thanks for having us. Appreciate that. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Stevens. Stay tuned. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Mike Stevens wrapping up the 547th edition of Outside the Loop. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Andy for producing. Thanks to Veronica for doing news. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. And of course, thanks to the incomparable Lou Manfredini. Mr. Fix-It, how are you?
Morning. How are you?
I'm doing just great.
Was thinking about you last night.
Okay. Let's continue with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was last night I went to a show.
Yes.
At the City Winery.
Oh, yeah. Great spot.
Have you been there on Randolph?
Oh, yeah. Very cool
That
spot.
Whole West Loop is just happening over there.
It's crazy how stuff has sprung up, you know?
We went to go see, are you familiar with an artist named Rufus Wainwright?
I am.
My sister-in-law is a huge fan, and they had a couple extra tickets, so Mary Beth and I went. It is such a cool venue. This guy has a really amazing voice.
Yeah.
And he's
the venue itself is, it's very intimate. I mean, you can be close. Even if you're in the back of the room, you still feel like you're pretty close to the stage.
Unbelievable how cool the place was. And it was really a lot of fun. And the whole scene where I guess they do make wine there.
They do. Yeah.
And the whole restaurant area, too. Very cool place to go see a show. And they have major league talent coming to that place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, well, you know, it's interesting because, like, the way that place is designed, actually, it'd be right up your alley. There's a lot of wood and stone.
Oh,
and,
yeah. You know, I love a good exposed brick wall.
See, I do, too. I am not handy at all, as you know, but I can dig a very nice exposed brick wall.
Right. It's easy. Simple to do.
That's right.
All right.
Big show. You've got, what do you have, Secretary of State or what?
I've got the Secretary of State coming up in a little bit, and then I also have, right. No,
right. Right. Is Obama back in town? Do you have him on now?
Exactly. No, I don't.
All right.
Is he back in town?
No, I don't know. He still has a house here, right?
Well, I'm sure somebody at some point will announce that they're going to run for governor during our show, because now there's like 800 people that are running for governor in Illinois.
Can I, you know, you always throw ideas at me.
Sure.
Can I throw an idea at
you? Absolutely.
Former President Obama still has a house on the south side here. That house is probably in need of some, you know, upkeep.
Been a little neglected. We should do a remote from there.
Look at... For once, I'm giving you the ideas.
I like it. We'll do
live
a remote
from Hyde Park.
From Hyde, from the Obama house. We'll give people a radio tour. Like, wow, this bathroom needs some updating.
I hope you're taking notes.
We could have the builder supply outlet people do a kitchen. Right? Right?
Lindholm to do the roof?
Lindholm can do the roof, right? We got a whole thing. We can have American Weathermakers put in a new furnace. I bet all that stuff needs to be updated.
Somehow, let's get Ace involved, too.
We can get Ace to paint the place.
Love it.
Yeah? All right. You are good.
Thank you, Lou.
Your work is done.
Thank you, Lou. I'm just full of great ideas. And thank you for listening to Outside the Loop. I will talk to you again next time right here on 720 WGN.